It is 7:45 on a Saturday morning. That means it's time for another wine chat with our friend from Haskell's, Ted Farrell. Ted, good morning to you.
Good morning, Daddy. How are you today?
I'm fine. I'm starting to dress in layers, but it looks like that forecast, I can get back to the shorts this week. I like that.
Well, you know, you're always been the optimist, Denny. Hands down, you've always been a ray of sunshine and an optimist, thick and thin, that is for sure.
Well, what are we going to be talking about today, Ted? What's the center of discussion?
Well, the center of the discussion is it's always a terrific time of the year, at least in my mind, is when all of a sudden, you know, the summer is, well, we still have, I'll be an optimist as well, they still have another month of summer, but it is technically behind us. The fair is over. You're all loaded up on all those corn dogs and all that kind of stuff. You have to look forward to something. And the one thing that in my family we definitely look forward to is football season. Oh, boy. I mean, it is just a rite of passage when all of a sudden you either get the Friday night lights, the Minnesota Golden Gophers, they'll be playing later on today, or the Vikings, we fire up their season on Monday against those brutal Bears. And, you know, it's just one of those things where it's just a great thing to do as far as sitting around, enjoying one another, have some friends over, and have a proper football watching party. I mean, it's just it's fantastic. You know, the nice thing is, yeah, it is a little bit cold, so you don't feel so bad sitting inside. But nowadays, so many people have outdoor kitchens and outdoor gardens, that type of thing, where they even hang a TV outside. So you maybe get that outside experience watching football. And it is an American sport that we all love to do and we get into. But the most important thing about this watching parties is the food and the wines and the beverages that you serve, because there is that camaraderie of people getting together, watching their favorite team, cheering them on, and, you know, either enjoying the victory or suffering in defeat. And, you know, in a not very scientific poll, when I was down on the sales floor talking to different people who are stocking up in the stores, it does seem that the type of food and fare that seems to be dominating these types of parties are sort of the Mexican type foods or definitely Southwest foods. The commonality is generally they're very spicy. Whether somebody is brewing up a nice big vat of chili, which I'll be doing a little later on today. I found a little ground buffalo in my freezer that I'll be making with a friend of mine. Buffalo farmer Steve Geist gave me a bunch of buffalo, and I'm very excited to turn that into a little bit of chili. But, you know, it's that spiciness to it. And there's so many different derivations of chili that you can do. My wife makes a very, very mean vegetarian chili, but on the same side, it's spicy. But, you know, it's all those great flavors that you see, whether it is chili, you have the combination of textures and flavors, or, you know, whether you're doing, you know, just nachos. Maybe you have a pulled pork that's on the spicier side that you dribble over those nachos, dropping jalapenos on there, melting the cheese, doing all that type of stuff to prepare for all that. But, you know, you have those complex flavors on your plate and what you're trying to enjoy. Even, you know, sometimes people just make sandwiches, but even those sandwiches can be kind of spicy because you see people doing like a spicy buffalo chicken sandwich where it's like a pulled chicken that has all those spices on it and then little sliders on there that they pack it in there, but you still have that tanginess and spice. And some of the best wines, in my humble opinion, that go well with all that kind of crazy spice and the different flavors and the different layers are Spanish wines. Now, Spanish wines, you know, they have been making wine in Spain for millennia. You know, when the Romans came over, they found some vineyards already intact, but then in typical Roman fashion, you know, they kind of organized it and got it going. And the many different regions in Spain, all across its entire country, there's different wine regions to see and explore. And there's La Mancha, there's Valdepeñas, there's the Rioja. And one great varietal that dominates most of Spain is a great varietal called Tempranillo. Tempranillo comes from the derivation of temprana, which means early. It was one of the first grapes to always kind of ripen up and get ready to harvest. It's a very wonderful red wine. Very, as far as flavoration, it's a little bit on the neutral side. It isn't an overabundant, like, big pop with Cassis the way a Cabernet is, and it isn't so soft and elegant like a Pinot Noir is, as far as a little bit more dark cherry. It's kind of right in between that. And the Tempranillo grape is actually, about 4 or 5 years ago, the fourth most abundant grape varietal planted throughout the world. Truly amazing. And 85% of that actually is planted in Spain. So when you go to Spain and you go kick around there, you'll have easy opportunity to run into the Tempranillo grape and its different derivations and their different aging methods and winemaking techniques with that. But it's a great grape varietal that goes so well with that because it's a very even-keeled grape varietal. It takes, again, the oak exposure so well. Now, the area in which the Tempranillo grape is kind of put up on the pedestal is an area called Rioja. Rioja is kind of in the northern part of Spain, right a little bit south of the town of Bilbao, and it's probably the Spanish's equivalent of Bordeaux. And it's kind of interesting saying that because during the big phylloxera crisis about 200 years ago, where the varietals and the vines were all taken over by the phylloxera, a lot of Bordelais actually came down to Spain because that area hadn't been affected yet and started making wines. And what they kind of introduced to the Spanish was aging the wines in barrels. That was a new discovery for the Spanish. They usually, in a lot of those bodegas, had these huge clay pots in which they aged the wines in. And then sometimes they would even age them outside. So the Bordelais kind of gave them a little winemaking technique of bringing those wines inside the bodega so they can ferment a little bit, but then aging those into the oak cask. Now, there's several different derivations of Rioja. The first one is called Crianza. Now, Crianza is a grape variety, Tempranillo, that's aged for a minimum of 2 years in an oak barrel. And generally 2 years after October 1st, but depending on the harvest, they will look the other way. But it has to be aged at least 24 months in the oak barrel. Now, the next one is they have Reserva. Now, Reserva has to be aged at a minimum of 3 years in an oak barrel. Also, a little bottle aging as well. And then you get into the big guys, and those have to be aged into the not only 3 years in the oak, but then a minimum of 2 years in the bottle. So there's a lot of time that goes on with this, but their production levels are quite well. But the great thing about those aged Tempranillos is that they have the characteristic and a body to go well with that. And believe it or not, you can sniff around and find a lot of Spanish vines that are very affordable, very inexpensive, and really hit the spot. So when you're doing a little party like that, one of which we have a El Jamón, there's also a Tempranillo and a Crianza for only $12.99. I mean, that is just a steal. And when you're having a lot of people over, you don't feel bad kind of loading up on those type of wines and having them around because it will go so well with that kind of flair that you're doing. Even if the second most popular fare that we saw was kind of the Italian side of things, and those wines would go well with those Italian wines as well. You don't have to do Chianti. You could try that Crianza. But with that being said, those wines are so great. The Tempranillo, little Crianza from the El Jamón, is just a wonderful way to go about it because it won't overpower. It slides right with all those different layers of flavor and whatnot. And then there's also a little buy one, get one called Tridente, which is basically translates the Trident. And that's $19.99 BOGO. So, but final cost is about $10 a bottle, Denny. And so, that's a heck of a deal when you're having a lot of people over. You want everybody to enjoy things and really have a good time. Quite frankly, yes, this is the wine chat, but, with football as well, don't be afraid to serve a little bit of beer, too, because beer definitely goes well with all that spicy food, whether it is a domestic, inexpensive beer like a Coors Light, that kind of thing, or a fantastic locally made beer like a Surly, which is a little bit more flavor, a little bit more robust to have that. Now, also, if you're kind of entertaining on that side, I would say if you're going to do any hard alcohol or mixed drinks, I would kind of tell people to, maybe do a self-service bar, have people do it their way rather than doing, having a bartender and mixing it. And sometimes, though, for ease sake, maybe you just don't want to do that. That's too much hassle. But if you are going to do a little self-service bar like that, I would always recommend make sure all your bases are covered as far as you have a little bit of rum, you have a little bit of gin, you have some vodka, but then a few whiskeys. You don't have to get too exotic, but just have the basics and the basic mixers for that. I mean, you can get as kind of Martha Stewart-esque and have a signature cocktail for your party, but you really don't have to do that. That's a little bit too much work. You're busy, you know, getting all those wonderful chilies and burritos and tacos and nachos already and raring. So maybe keep it simple and just serve a lot of wonderful beer and those wonderful, wonderful Spanish red wines, the Tempranillo especially. There is another great varietal that Spain does offer. It's called Granacha. We see it in other areas called Grenache. That's a wonderful, well-made wine as well. But the Tempranillo is sort of the king grape varietal of Spain that people have been enjoying for literally almost 2,000 years, Denny. And it's a great, fun way to sit and kick off this great football season that we're starting right now with all the hopes and aspirations of either a national football title or maybe a Super Bowl, right?
All right. Talk about being positive. All right. And I'm still knocked out by those prices of those Spanish wines, and I love those Spanish wines. They, to me, I compare them with almost anything. But the prices these days for that, I thought you were mistakenly reading the wrong price, but that's a tremendous buy.
Well, the trick is on that, Denny, is that the Spaniards have had the infrastructure of making great wines for all these years, thousands and thousands of years. But on the other side, for a little while and up until about the 50s, where people are exchanging ideas and exchanging technology, quite frankly, with that great infrastructure they had, they never made great wine. And now with the exchange of ideas, you know, sometimes when you go into those vineyards in Spain, you see an Australian kid there on an internship, a few kids from UC Davis, kids from France, kids from Germany, all kind of exchanging ideas. And quite like I kind of said, the Bordelais, you know, introduced wood. The Americans have introduced stainless steel, temperature-controlled vats that you can put in there that really equalize that. So they didn't have to replant and start it from scratch. They already had the great vineyards to do it. Now they have the great technology. So they didn't have to invest so much that keeps those prices so low.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, tell you what, Ted, we're almost out of time, but tell folks where they can find all these great ideas that you have.
You are correct. So if our team wins, we'll take care of you. And if our team loses, we'll be there in misery with you. So we have a Haskell's all throughout the metro area to take care of all your football needs or any of your tailgate needs or even, you know, international football needs as well. We have a Haskell's in downtown Minneapolis with lots of free parking, a Haskell's right at the Ridgedale Shopping Center on 394, a Haskell's in Highland Village right on Ford Parkway, a Haskell's down in Lomans Plaza in Bloomington. If you're out on the lake today, we were right in Haskell's. There's a Haskell's right in downtown Excelsior. Also, if you're headed out east, Haskell's at White Bear Lake. If you're going on the St. Croix River, stop by our Haskell's in Stillwater. If you're going down south, pull off of 35 to go to our Haskell's in Faribault. If you're headed on north, swing by the Haskell's in Plymouth or stop by the Haskell's Super Cellar up in Maple Grove. It's a sight to be seen. Load up everything. Get ready for that football season. If you can't hit any of those, please stop by Haskell's.com, and we even will deliver to you.
Fantastic. Ted, thanks so much. Go Gophers, and let's talk next week.
That's right. Skull Bites, go row the boat.
All right. Thanks, Ted. Ted Farrell from Haskell's.